sixth case, United States versus Stokes. Mr. Stevens.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I'm Jay Stevens, representing the appellant Robert Stokes in this case. And the issues raised in this case are effective assistance of counsel. Did Mr. Stokes receive effective assistance of counsel? And secondly, was there a Brady violation in the government's failure to disclose exculpatory evidence? The three key players in this case, the appellant, Mr. Stokes, of course, is the defendant in this case, charged with conspiracy to possess with intent to distribute a controlled substance. Mr. Hickman, who was the co-conspirator turned confidential informant in the case, who did not testify at trial, but who was quoted by a government witness as saying that he got drugs from Mr. Stokes, and Lakeisha Miller, Mr. Stokes' girlfriend, who was not a defendant in the case, who was the government's star witness. It's important to note that there were no drugs seized from Mr. Stokes in this case. There were no drugs were negotiated that actually were delivered in this case. Other than Mr. Hickman and Lakeisha Miller, there are no witnesses who came in and testified that they saw Mr. Stokes with any drugs in the case. Now, obviously, it's not necessary to produce drugs in order to convict someone of a conspiracy count. A conspiracy is the agreement and not the substantive offense itself. Nevertheless, the evidence in the case that the government put on depended on two witnesses, Mr. Hickman, who was arrested, and at the time he was arrested, was asked to cooperate, agreed to cooperate against Mr. Stokes, and then proceeded to participate in attempting to set up a drug transaction. Lakeisha Miller, who testified that as Mr. Stokes' girlfriend, she was privy to a number of conversations, including that he received the drugs. He got them from an individual by the name of Glenn Frisk, she had given Mr. Hickman drugs on his behalf, and that he was going to San Antonio to buy drugs. And in fact, she had made reservations for that trip. Now, obviously then, the credibility of Mr. Hickman, the credibility of Lakeisha Miller are critical to the defense of this case. And in fact, Mr. Stokes' attorney made that promise or made that representation in his opening argument. He said that these two individuals were arrested on drug charges, these two individuals were charged, and these two individuals agreed to cooperate. That's why they were testifying the way they were. He also said that Mr. Stokes didn't have the money to deal drugs. He said the same thing in his closing arguments. In his closing arguments, he said that these two individuals made deals, that they were lying because they had made deals and they were trying to protect themselves, and that Mr. Stokes didn't have the money to deal in kilo quantities of drugs. What he didn't do is fill in the middle. In effect, it's kind of like going into a restaurant and ordering a ham sandwich, and they bring you two slices of bread and say that as a strategy decision, they've left the ham out of the middle. Because Mr. Stokes' counsel was given the names and the potential testimony of a number of witnesses who would be impeaching witnesses as to the statements of Mr. Hickman and as to the statements of Lakeisha Miller. And by his own admission, those witnesses he did not interview, did not investigate, other than talk to Mr. Stokes about those individuals. Now, counsel raised the issue of whether this was a strategy decision. In fact, he said, this was a strategy decision. I decided these witnesses wouldn't add anything. And normally, strategy decisions are something that we don't address on the issue of ineffective assistance of counsel. In order to analyze the strategy decision, though, that Mr. Bishop made as trial counsel, we have to look at what his strategy was. And his strategy was, these two individuals are lying. His strategy was Mr. Stokes didn't have the money to be able to participate in drug dealings. And yet, the key witnesses who are able to prove that, he doesn't even interview. He didn't call them as witnesses. In fact, he didn't even call them on the telephone or go to see them to see if he could assess their credibility as witnesses. Now, let's look at what the witnesses would say. Donald Bennett was an inmate at MCC, and clearly he had problems as a potential witness.
Well, he had prior convictions for bank robbery and forgery.
Had prior convictions for bank robbery, and in addition was under medication for
schizophrenia.
That's correct. Certainly that raises some questions as to whether he is a witness. Mr. Bishop didn't interview him, didn't see him, didn't talk to him to assess his credibility. A reasonable attorney would have at least taken that step.
Mr. Stevens, accepting for the moment that it would have been reasonable and better to interview, is that decision trumped by the tapes? In other words, is the evidence between Stokes and Hickman that's recorded make the failure to do as thorough a job not as compelling in an ineffective system setting?
My guess would be that Mr. Bishop listened to the tape and folded, because the tape itself certainly creates a great deal of difficulty for Mr. Stokes. On the tape, Mr. Stokes is discussing with Mr. Hickman how to conduct drug transactions, is discussing with him details such as don't live in your stash house, or words to that effect. It's important to remember, though, that at the time that tape was made, Mr. Hickman was already a government informant, was already cooperating. He could not be a co-conspirator at the time that tape was made. So that was not part of a conspiracy between Mr. Stokes and Mr. Hickman. I think a reasonable attorney also would have, in light of the testimony that was available, been able to attack that tape on the theory that Mr. Hickman was in fact a cooperating government witness at that time and knew he was being taped and was in control of the conversation. But the important thing
is, and that certainly goes to whether or not there was a conspiracy, but that doesn't negate the admissions.
Well, the important thing is that tape was not an admission of a conspiracy.
No, I understand that. Not a conspiracy, but certainly the statements would come in as admissions. Tape recorded conversations, just admissions.
Certainly the tape recording would come in. I have no quibble or quarrel with that, and the jury would have an opportunity to hear that. But it's not an admission of conspiracy, and in fact, the tape doesn't say, you and I, Mr. Hickman, have been conspiring in the past on these things. In fact, while it is a drug-related conversation and certainly shows Mr. Stokes has knowledge, and in fact Mr. Stokes has a prior conviction for traffic in narcotics, the fact that the tape was in existence was not sufficient to trump the availability of these witnesses. In fact, the counsel failed to even interview the witnesses who were potential witnesses that would have the ability to attack the credibility of Lakeisha Miller and Benjamin Hickman, and that falls below the reasonable standard that we expect of attorneys. With regard to the second point, the Brady violation, my time is running short here, so I'll rely on the arguments that were made in the briefs.
Thank you, Mr. Stevens. Mr. Baker.
May it please the court, I'm Andrew Baker on behalf of the United States. First, apologize to this court for the errors in the government's brief and the facts, as pointed out by appellant in the reply brief. Glenn Franks was on the visitor list for the defendant Stokes at the Bradley House. That list is given to the people by the defendant, so it was given to them by Stokes. Contrary to the assertion in the brief, though, there's no indication Fink visited Stokes at the Bradley House on January 8th or whatever the date was. He was simply on the visitor list. The jury was not misled on that fact, and it's of no significance at this point because it shows the connection between Stokes and the source, Glenn Frank, by Stokes putting him on the visitor list for Bradley House and then the other evidence. That other evidence is the subject of the second error at the Alpha Hotel in San Antonio, Texas. Our brief reflects that Frank was shown staying there at the time the meeting was set up for February 12th that Stokes didn't attend. In fact, the record shows that Frank was there on January 25th, I believe, sometime earlier. But again, it shows the connection between the reservations made for Stokes to travel to Texas to meet Frank, the fact that Frank was the supplier. There's Frank's in Texas at that same motel less than a month earlier, giving an address at address very close to the address he used to the visitor list at Bradley House. So again, that it makes no difference. The jury was not misled with respect to that. And the use of the telephones at MCC, appellant points out that the attorney phone only rings in the public defender's office. It's unlikely that any third-party call was placed out of there to Lakeisha Miller by Stokes. And it was the numbers dialed out of the counselor's office are also would be checked by the counselor. But again, that could have been a third-party call, as could calls made from the inmate phones. All the list showed that they had was there was no direct dialed phone call to Lakeisha Miller's number on that date in that she said she got that threatening telephone call from Robert Stokes. It does not eliminate the prospect of third party calls, or as the government indicated in their response to the motion, the use of a contraband cellular phone in the institution. There's yet one more error in our brief on page 9. We reflect that Stokes' trial counsel got Trooper Williams to admit that Hickman did not begin to cooperate until he was in custody for 24 hours. That is also incorrect. Trooper Williams testified that Hickman was in their custody for 24 hours, and in that time period, he decided to cooperate. That's pages 166 and 167 in volume 1, the testimony of Trooper Williams. In fact, the arrest of Hickman took place about noon on the 9th. The foundations for the recorded telephone calls show the first call was made at 5 p.m. to Lakeisha Miller. The second one was made at 5:19 p.m. that day to Lakeisha Miller. The third call to Stokes was made at 7 o'clock. And the evidence indicates that the meeting took place in the early morning hours that was the subject of the most damning evidence, the body recorder that Hickman wore when he went to meet him occurred on the early morning hours of February 10th. That's in volume 2, page 62, where that's shown. So he wasn't in custody 24 hours before the cooperation occurred. Putting that aside, believe that the government's case was more than two pieces of bread or a ham. It was prime rib. We had that tape that not only showed his intimate knowledge of drug dealing, but was in fact an admission of conspiracy. He talked about he gave a kilogram of cocaine to another co-conspirator, Williams, instead of to Hickman. Stokes said this because Williams had a scale and Stokes didn't. He also indicated that Willie Williams and his helpers broke up that kilogram in some short period of time. It talked about impending deals of cocaine that Stokes was getting, that he would go to Texas or he would bring some back, corresponding with Lakeisha Miller's evidence. The really part that Corinth Bishop saw that the defendant would have great difficulty getting around was the tape of Stokes talking about the drug deals, agreeing to make a delivery to the next day. I'll give you something to work with. It may be only a quarter, which is a quarter of an ounce for Hickman to deal with the very next day, that he would have more dope coming. And while Corinth Bishop did never talk to Bennett or the other witnesses, he talked to Stokes about what these people would say. And his testimony clearly understood that he understood Bennett's baggage, that Bennett had these robbery convictions and Bennett had the bipolar disorder, and decided they would not make good witnesses. It wasn't Hickman's credibility that was an issue. He didn't testify, and the tapes are adopted admissions and admissions by Stokes, not testimony. It doesn't matter from the standpoint of the government's case. In those tapes, Hickman could be a certified perjurer. It's what Stokes is saying in response to those things that make the government's case against him. Finally, with respect to Lakeisha Miller and the Brady material, the indication from the MCC, it doesn't negate the fact that it was a third-party call. That threat testimony was a very small part of her testimony. Even if that were proven untrue, her other testimony is corroborated substantially by evidence before she knew the government had it, or she had been confronted by the government or knew anything about Hickman's flip. She had indicated her involvement in the drug activity and knowledge of it, and in her own recorded conversations with Hickman, the two early calls on the 9th, plus her notes about that trip and the identity in Stokes' brother's name. And then clearly Stokes, at the later hearings, indicates, John Stokes, the brother, indicated that indeed Robert Stokes had his ID. The other witnesses added nothing to the case that Corinth didn't really prove through government witnesses, that they had no indication Stokes had any money, which was all his ex-wife would have testified to and other things. So accordingly, unless the court has any questions, we rely on our brief, which I believe otherwise is accurate, and ask that you affirm the judgment.
Thank you, Mr. Baker. Mr. Stevens?
Trials are about to dispute the facts, and Mr. Bishop didn't present the fact that the jury would be able to determine what the disputed facts are. Donald Bennett may have had some problems as a result of his schizophrenia. Ed Kreshak also was prepared to testify. He was an MCC inmate and had a prior conviction, but he was prepared to testify that Benjamin Hickman did not say, or in fact, Benjamin Hickman said that he did not get the drugs from Robert Stokes. Trooper Williams testified that Hickman made that statement. That statement should have been refuted. The evidence in the case certainly was strong based upon the government's presentation. It would have been substantially less strong had counsel presented the witnesses that were available to attack the credibility of the state's or the government's two chief witnesses. Accordingly, we don't have to have a perfect trial, obviously, but we do have to have one that we have reasonable confidence in the verdict. Thank you.
Thank you, Stevens. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.